This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Congress hopes to break for the holidays soon, but there is still unfinished business. The issues are important, but also hugely contentious. This week, most of the action has been in the U.S. Senate. Yesterday, Vice President Cheney came down to cast a tie-breaking vote on a deficit reduction bill. Then a group of mostly Democratic senators blocked passage of the defense appropriations bill, usually a must-pass measure, and forced the leadership to take out an amendment that would have allowed drilling for oil in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. Then, last night, the Senate voted to extend the USA Patriot Act for 6 months. Earlier, the White House and the Republican leadership refused any delay on the Patriot Act, but grudgingly accepted the six-month deal. Over the past few weeks, important parts of the president's agenda have been stalled, blocked, or killed in Congress. It's the most serious legislative opposition since he was first elected. Later on in the program, we'll take a closer look at two court cases where federal judges have challenged the administration as well, on the detention of enemy combatants and on warrantless wiretaps of Americans. But we begin in Congress. If you have questions about what's happening on any of these big bills or about the larger issues of presidential power and congressional politics, give us a call. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN at NPR.org. Ken Rudin is NPR's political editor. He joins us here in Studio 3A. And Ken, very nice of you to be with us.
Thanks
as always.
Thanks for having me, Neil.
And first, the Patriot Act. Senior Republicans in the White House saying as late as yesterday they would not accept any extensions. They wanted this to be made permanent now. And then there's a six-month extension.
You know, and we've seen this before. A few weeks ago, President Bush said he would absolutely not accept language from the John McCain amendment that would bar torture of foreign detainees. He said absolutely not. I would veto it before anything happens. And the president caved. It's a sign, one, of the fact that a lot of Republicans are distancing themselves from a president who has shown weaker and weaker poll numbers, although there has been some spike lately, and the fact that a president in the sixth year of the presidency. You have a President Bush who cannot run again, who will not be on the ballot again, but these Republicans will. So there's more and more declarations of independence.
Mm-hmm. So when the president left the White House to get on his helicopter yesterday and said the Senate must do this and the Senate needs to do that before, and then they didn't.
Right, and there's some grumblings by some conservatives in the House. So the House is going to meet today at 4 o'clock, and ostensibly they will do a unanimous consent to extend the Patriot Act for 6 months. But again, there are people like the Judiciary Committee Chairman James Sensenbrenner of Wisconsin who says absolutely not. I want a permanent, a 4-year, a renewal. But again, we've seen people back down before, and we could see it again.
Mm-hmm. And then on the defense appropriations bill, that would require the House of Representatives to strip out their version of the ANWR permission to go ahead and drill in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, and again, accept the Senate's obstreperousness.
Well, again, of course, people, whether it's a Democrat against Republican or Republican against Republican, members of the House don't like to be dictated to by what the Senate does. But still, again, there's been a lot of unease about ANWR in the House as well. There are a lot of moderate Republicans who would like to see it go away. And when they come back at 4 o'clock, the defense bill will pass again by voice, by unanimous consent without any debate.
And that will leave ANWR in limbo. It's an issue that's not going away. It's just not getting approved right now.
It's been limbo for decades. Ted Stevens, a senior senator from Alaska, senior Republican from Alaska, has been fighting it for over 25 years. And I guess he'll fight it again. He'll try to attach it to something next year, too. But it's interesting. If Ted Stevens could not get it passed now, which some say could be the last year of Republican control of the House and Senate, and next year being an election year, this may have been his best chance.
Mm-hmm. He called it, I think yesterday, the worst day in my life.
Even the Hulk was crying on his tie.
You've got to explain that, Ken.
Ted Stevens is known for his incredible Hulk ties, and he wears it for special occasions. He always says, when I wear it, I do not lose, but he did lose yesterday.
Mm-hmm. And on the one that the president's supporters are calling a win for them, and that's deficit reduction, a squeaker of a vote in the Senate, and then the Democrats use some parliamentary maneuverings to, again, force another vote in the House of Representatives, but that $40 billion in deficit reductions did go through.
Well, it went through the Senate, and again, you know, Dick Cheney had to drive all the way from the Mideast to come here from you know, other parts of the world to cast a tie-breaking vote. But because of some procedural matters, the Democrats made some changes, and then now Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats in the House say they will not agree to an automatic vote today, a unanimous consent, so it would be put off till next year. And by doing so, Pelosi and the Democrats will make some moderate Republicans take some another uncomfortable vote on cutting things like Medicaid, Medicare, food stamps, school lunches, things like that.
We're talking about the rush of big legislation that's trying to make its way out of Congress at the end of this session. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255. Email is totn@npr.org. We're also going to be talking later about the broader issue of the president's political and constitutional rivalry with some in Congress, and later, of course, also with the judicial branch. Anyway, let's get a caller on the line. This is Jennifer calling from Silver Spring in Maryland.
Hi, I just had a quick question. I was wondering, how was the Senate able to strip out the ANWR provision? Was it using, what is it, Rule 28?
Rule 28, Ken.
Right. Well, what you need to know is that Ted Stevens attached it to any vehicle he can. He tried to attach it to a budget bill, but moderate Republicans in the House wouldn't go along with it. He tried and so it failed. Then he attached it to the defense spending bill. And basically what happened was Democrats, he basically dared Democrats to vote against it, given the fact that this is $453 billion for troops fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan, in addition to hurricane aid and flu preparedness funds. Stevens attached it to this bill and dared Democrats to vote against it. And Democrats said, look, you know, we are not against the war. We are not against drilling in ANWR. And how dare you suggest that by voting against this, we are not backing our fighting soldiers across the around the world. What it is that it's a breach of Senate politics and Senate rules to attach something to a must-pass bill. So Joe Lieberman, who's a big supporter of the war in Iraq, stood up yesterday and said, look, this has nothing to do with it. Of course I support the troops, but this is not the way to do it. And so what happened was Democrats and some Republicans filibustered the bill and filibustered. And so as long as ANWR was part of this defense spending bill, it was not going to get passed. And then they had another rule, which was the Rule 28, the Byrd rule, which basically they a thing by Maria Cantwell, Democrat of Washington State, voted to take ANWR out of the final bill. And they did that by a 48-45 vote.
Jennifer, Rule 28, there you go.
Thank you. I'm a government teacher, and so the kids have been asking me, so I wanted to make sure I was correct.
Okay, well, there you go.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's bring another voice into the conversation now, and this is Jack Pitney, professor of government at Claremont McKenna College, and he joins us from the studios of NPR West in Culver City. And Professor Pitney, nice to have you on the program again.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask you about this broader question that I've been talking briefly with Ken about, and that is the president has encountered more legislative opposition, I think, in the past 3 or 4 weeks than he did in his entire term.
That's right. And part of it is that he was extraordinarily successful in his first term in maintaining Republican unity. He had the war on terror, the war in Iraq, and that tends to unify political support. He also had the outcome of the 2002 midterm, in which he regained a Senate majority. A lot of Republicans were grateful for that. He had a successful reelection, strengthened Republican majorities in both chambers. But the law of political gravity eventually kicks in. What goes up must come down, and we saw it come down in the past few weeks.
And should we see this? I'm sorry, Ken, you wanted to?
Well, I was going to say, plus the fact that you also see Republican leadership hurt in both the House and Senate. You have a distraction with Tom DeLay in the House. He stepped aside. Roy Blunt, his nominal successor from Missouri, is not doing the job, and a lot of Republicans are waiting for Tom DeLay to come back and rescue them, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen.
Another delay in his trial in Texas announced today, so it doesn't look like he's going to be back anytime
soon.
Delay.
That's right. And in the Senate, you have Bill Frist, who's already said he's not running for re-election next year. He's already looking at a presidential bid. And so as a lame duck, plus the fact that he has an SEC, a Securities and Exchange Commission investigation going into some stock sales, he may be distracted as well. So the leadership, the Republican leadership in both the House and the Senate is proving wanting.
And Jack Pitney, I guess we can't leave that litany without mentioning the negotiations that are apparently underway right now with Jack Abramoff and his attorneys, who may agree to a guilty plea. At least that's the speculation here in Washington, and that's something that has a lot of members of Congress deeply worried.
Absolutely. Nobody is quite sure whom Abramoff is going to name, what kind of accusations that will come out of that, possibly indictments. And the word indictment tends to scare a lot of people on Capitol Hill. So instead of Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, we're seeing an episode of The Sopranos.
But talking about this friction that the president's been encountering in Congress in the past several weeks, should we see this as cyclical, something Ken was talking about, this happens every time in a president's sixth term, or is this to some degree a response by some in Congress to what they perceive as presidential overreaching?
Well, it's a combination of the two. Certainly, in the second term, a president generally loses support in Congress. People start looking ahead to the day when the president will no longer be in office. But also, there's another cycle coming in. That's the cycle of political warfare. That is, at the beginning of a war, members of Congress tend to unite around the president. But as the war drags on, the separation of powers kicks in, and members of Congress start to question the administration. And that's true both in the case of the war in Iraq and the war on terror.
Start to question the administration again. The administration pointing out to us on several occasions, hey, you all voted for the Patriot Act when it was approved. You all approved of the war going in, and there are some exceptions, of course, and trying to hoist members of Congress on their own petard on their own previous votes.
That's right, and we'll see more of that in the days ahead. We've seen Republicans striking back by pointing out Harry Reid was present at the signing of the Patriot Act. We see a lot of references to the acts of previous presidents in supporting warrantless searches. So there's going to be a lot of back and forth on that, and the key question for members of Congress is the reaction of the public when it comes to issues of national security. They're going to side with Congress or the president.
We're talking with Jack Pitney, a professor of government at Claremont McKenna College in California, and NPR's political editor Ken Rudin, about the end-of-the-year legislation in Congress and also, more broadly, about checks and balances, as Capitol Hill puts a few roadblocks in the way of the president's agenda. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join us. I'm Neil Conan. We'll be back after the break. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about last-minute efforts to pass legislation on Capitol Hill this week. Most members of Congress already returned to their districts for the holidays. They're being summoned back for a meeting this afternoon at 4 o'clock in the House of Representatives for some votes. This is on the Patriot Act extension, the Defense Appropriations Bill, and these are measures the president would have previously gotten through Congress with little difficulty. He encountered quite a bit of difficulty this past week. Our guests are Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor, and Jack Pitney, professor of government at Claremont McKenna College in California. If you have questions about what's happening with those bills or about presidential power and congressional politics, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Later on in the program, we'll be talking with two constitutional scholars about a couple of other things that have come out. Warrantless searches, electronic searches of Americans that authorized by the president without judicial review, and then a court decision yesterday, an appellate court decision, that refused the president permission to transfer Jose Padilla, the so-called dirty bomber, from the military control to civilian control. He'd been indicted on a couple of counts, saying that this looked like an attempt to avoid a review of his case before the Supreme Court. So we're going to be finding out what all of that's about. But anyway, first back to Capitol Hill and to politics. And talking about the leadership, as Ken, just before the break, is there any suggestion now that the House of Representatives, they're going to look for a new leader, or that in the Senate, where Mr. Frist, as you say, is a lame duck at this point, that they might be looking towards new leadership?
Well, that's a very good question, because now the schedule as it stands right now, the House is not scheduled to come back until January 31st, missing the entire month of January. And most people are saying the reason the Republican leadership has left open the month is so Tom DeLay could somehow be acquitted of what's going on in Texas, because he's under indictment there. The problem with that is that even if he does beat this case, this Ronnie Earl case in Texas, he is still, as Jack Pitney
Ronnie
said before,
Earl, the Democratic prosecutor.
Right, the Travis County, Austin District Attorney, right. If he's exonerated in that case, the worst case scenario for the Republicans is that he beats the case, comes back to Washington, is welcomed by open arms by his Republican colleagues. He's reinstated as majority leader. Then, boom, he gets indicted caught up in the Jack Abramoff mess. So the Republicans are very nervous about what to do there. There's a leadership vacuum clearly in the House, and there are maybe a handful, but it's a growing handful of those who say, let's not wait for Tom DeLay anymore. We have to look elsewhere and get new leadership.
And Jack Pitney, let me throw a question about the other side of the aisle, the relatively new leadership in both houses for the Democrats, Nancy Pelosi in the House of Representatives and Harry Reid in the United States Senate. They have not exactly electrified America either.
No, they've done a skillful job procedurally in Congress, especially in the past week, in throwing up roadblocks to legislation they don't like. What they haven't done yet is put together a clear and consistent message on the issues. And Nancy Pelosi has been on record as saying that her party doesn't need a clear and consistent message when it comes to Iraq. That may or may not prove true in the 2006 election if public opinion turns even more against policy in Iraq, then the Democrats could benefit even if they don't have a unified message. But there is a large faction in the party that wants to be for something and not just against something, and that's one layer of conflict that the Democrats have to contend with.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Robert. Robert's calling us from Somerville, Massachusetts.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
I just have a question about whether your guests think we're moving towards a real realignment, because the Republican Party that I grew up being aware of was opposed to deficit spending, opposed to government intrusion, and really really sharp on issues of civil liberties and defending them, opposed to foreign adventurism. And now you see that all of those sort of principles that the Republican Party seemed to be based on, it's kind of like never mind. So I'm wondering, is that a short-term thing, or are we really seeing the Republican Party transform into something very different than what it stood for 10 or 15 years ago?
Jack Pitney?
Well, if you go back in the 1980s, you found record-high deficits under the Reagan administration. You also found a lot of activism overseas in places such as Nicaragua and El Salvador. And many of the accusations being leveled against the current Bush administration were leveled against the Reagan administration. So the debate has a very familiar tone to it.
And also, if you remember, in 1994, when the Republicans were trying to and ultimately were successful in recapturing Congress, they said, look, there's a culture of corruption among these Democrats in Congress. You've got to vote them out after 40 years of you know, autocratic and unresponsive rule. We have to stop this wasteful spending. Well, lo and behold, 10 years later, you have Republicans in control of Congress with record deficits, and there's no shortage of corruption either. So it's, I don't know if there's a realignment among Republicans, but there's certainly something about a party that gets into power and what they do with that power.
But Robert's point is there are certainly elements of the Republican Party, and you think of Mike Pence, the congressman from Indiana, who are deficit hawks and very unhappy with the way a lot of these measures have been approved by the House, by Congress.
That's absolutely true. And look at the record. President Bush has yet to veto any kind of measure, no veto at all. And so if the president says he's very unhappy about the huge spending request by Congress, well, use that veto pen, and he has not so far.
And we're talking about Republicans who control both houses of Congress and the White House, as if they're in power, because they are. And Jack Pitney, let me raise another point about that, and that is unhappiness by some Republicans as well about all of the pork in the transportation bill that just seemed to be out of whack this time around.
That's right. If you were to weigh the transportation bill in the amount of pork as measured that you could find at the supermarket, it would come to about 200 pounds for every man, woman, and child in the United States. There's an old saying among staffers on Capitol Hill, they're incumbents first and Republicans second. Members of Congress want to get reelected, and reelection involves servicing the constituencies, and we'll see that under both Republicans and Democrats. Mm-hmm.
But as Republicans try to expand their base and become the natural party of government, as a lot of Republican strategists tried to paint them over these past several years, Ken Rudin, as they've tried to expand that base, well, if you do that, you then incorporate a number of elements that are not necessarily happy with where the mainstream is going along. It's a less disciplined party.
But you know that's true about the Democrats too. When the Democrats were in the wilderness with losing with the McGoverns and the Mondales and the Dukakises, and along comes Bill Clinton, and he brings the Democrats out of the wilderness, and yet there were so many Democrats that said, what do we stand for? He's more conservative than he should be. He's tough on welfare. He's tough on crime. I mean, he's Republican light, and so therefore, what do we stand for? Both true believers in the Democratic and Republican Party have this gnawing uneasiness that that once you get in power, you just have to reach above, you have to reach for a majority, and in doing so, you lose your core values.
So, Robert, anywhere in there, did we answer any of your questions?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, maybe I'm thinking about, you know, I'm almost 50, and I'm thinking about the Republican Party of, you know, Barry Goldwater and Reagan before he got power, and just how really aggressive they were about the idea of small government, about protecting individual liberties, about making sure there were no intrusions, and how they trace that to to early American history. And I just feel like we've completely somehow lost that, and now it's we're for all that, except that now we have a war, and so forget all those principles, and now we're going to spend through the roof and do whatever we like on civil liberties. And I'm not a Republican, but I must say I'm kind of surprised that there's such a speedy abandonment of those principles. That's what it looks like to me.
I'm not sure everybody's abandoned them, but anyway, Robert, thank you very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Let's talk now with Sherry. Sherry's calling us from San Diego.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a little nervous.
Oh, go ahead. So are we.
My question has to do with other provisions that have sort of stayed under the radar in the defense bill. Obviously, the Alaskan oil drilling was the big measure that, caused the filibuster. But there is also a provision under the protection from avian flu headline that provides incredibly broad immunity to the pharmaceutical companies.
Mm-hmm.
This is not the first time that Senator Frist has inserted this language into bills. He's inserted it probably five or six times, starting with the Homeland Security bill, and it actually had to be removed from that bill in 2002. And my question is, will there be a way in which activists or concerned people can get provisions removed once the bill is passed?
So this is a bill, and let me just explain this for our audience. This is the Defense Appropriations Bill, which has been passed by both the House and the Senate and then sent to conference committee. They reconcile both versions so that the House and the Senate then vote on the same version of the bill. That's the version that the Senate objected to earlier this week over that provision on drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. A very unusual time, Ken Rudin, to try to get something out, because you can't amend a bill once it's once it's a conference report.
Right, and I'm not sure if Sherry's asking whether lawmakers in the House, for example, can take that out, because basically they won't, because they're going to approve the bill today at 4 mm-hmm. o'clock, again, by unanimous consent with no recorded vote. If Sherry's asking whether there's any recourse for regular citizens to, I'm not sure, Sherry, is that what you're asking?
Well, I mean, citizens' only recourse is through their legislators. I understand
right.
that.
But I don't think there's an opportunity at this point, Ken, to you, for further changes to that defense appropriations bill. And Sherry's right. There are other non-germane matters in it, Katrina relief and the avian flu thing that she's talking
My
about.
Understanding is that if the House votes on it today, that's a done deal.
Mm-hmm. Sherry, thank you.
Thank you.
I'm sorry if it's a disappointment, but thanks for the phone call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
As you look at this situation, Jack Pitney, is this? Can you find analogies? I mean, this was a president who really enjoyed, a lot of support. He did have control of Congress throughout his term, but nevertheless, he seems to have gotten his way for so long, and now running into difficulties.
One analogy would be President Reagan. President Reagan scored some very impressive victories in his first term. Even in his second term, he had the tax reform bill of 1985-1986. But in the 1986 midterms, Democrats retook control of the Senate, and his congressional support scores, as measured by Congressional Quarterly, fell to record lows. So President Reagan had a lot of difficulty in his second term as well.
Mm-hmm. This is, again, I guess, Ken Rudin, an illustration of that second-term blues that that so many presidents have.
Right, but, you know, and Jack knows this better than anybody, if you look at the initial success of Nixon and then how it fell apart, the initial success of Reagan and how it fell apart, unlike those two presidents, George W. Bush did have, for the most part, control of the House and Senate, comfortable control of the House and Senate for most of his presidency, given the fact that he has stratospheric ratings following 9/11, given the fact that they picked up seats in 2002 and was reelected in 2004. He came into office, I think the day he was reelected, he said, "I have political capital and I intend to use it." And yet the things he really wanted, like the permanent tax cuts and overhaul of Social Security and ANWR, none of that seems to be happening.
We're talking with NPR's political editor Ken Rudin and with Jack Pitney, a professor of government at Claremont McKenna College in California, about politics on Capitol Hill. And later in the program, we'll be talking with two congressional scholars about judicial chafing about presidential authority. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Jack Pitney, Ken was just talking about the examples of the second Nixon term and the second Reagan term. Of course, they both had major league scandals at the time, called Watergate and Iran-Contra. There's some fuss about warrantless searches authorized by the President of the United States, but that's nothing approaching either of these other two situations.
No, at least not at the current time. We'll see if there are hearings at the beginning of 2006. There may be revelations that get the public's attention in a way that they haven't so far. In 1974, the Republicans took a shellacking in the midterm election, but people who've looked at that have found it actually had a lot more to do with the recession of 1974 than with Watergate. One source of hope for the Republicans, and we saw this in the news broadcast just before this program, is that the economic news is generally pretty good. So that doesn't mean the Republicans are out of danger, but one source of danger that's lurked in the past isn't there yet.
Mm-hmm. And Ken Rudin, another concern for particularly members of Republicans in the House of Representatives is the Supreme Court's willingness now to review the redistricting case in Texas that gave the Republicans, effectively five more seats.
True, but I mean, if the question is whether Tom DeLay and the Republicans were overly partisan in drawing lines, well, that argument, I guess, gets thrown out immediately because Democrats have been doing that for years. And one of the reasons that Democrats had such control of the House of Representatives for 40 years is because of the control of the redistricting process.
Mm-hmm. Let's get another caller on the line before we have to go. This is Deborah, is that right, in St. Paul?
Yes.
Hi, go ahead, please.
Thank you for taking the call. I was calling because a few minutes ago you were talking about the bills that passed or didn't pass yesterday.
Right.
The Senate passed a budget reconciliation bill that's been called, even by yourself, a deficit reduction bill.
Mm-hmm.
But the same, that was $40 billion in program cuts. But the same leadership is passing a tax cut bill of $70 billion. So whatever it is, it's not going to reduce the deficit.
Ken Rudin?
That's a good point. And one of the reasons the Democrats in the House are very eager to have that vote, postpone the vote in the House until next year, because they want to point out the fact that not only is Congress about to cut programs for the poor, but they're about to give tax rebates to the rich. And especially in an election year, that could damage Republican hopes.
And again, we call them cuts in programs for the poor, even though what they're doing is restraining the growth, how quickly the programs grow, though it would cause people to be cut off the rolls.
100,000 people are being, yes, exactly.
It is a cut.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Deborah, thanks very much for the call.
All right.
That's the president's hope to get those tax cuts that he had passed in the first term made permanent, Ken Rudin. That's going to be another battle as we look forward to
it. It will be
year.
A battle, but again, the Republicans will say, if you look at the economics, what's going on out there with jobs and job creation and numbers, the economy is picking up, and I think President Bush's recent poll surges are showing that. So they are trying to make the case that the economic plan that Bush instituted in 2001 is working. But again, Democrats will gladly show the cuts in Medicaid, Medicare, and school lunches and things like that and say, no, this is not the way to go.
And briefly, Jack Pitney, can we look forward to even more partisan battles over the next year as we come up to the 2006 elections?
That's the safest best bet you can make. There's a lot of uncertainty in the future, but the one thing that we can all agree on is this is going to be a very bloody and partisan year coming ahead, and there's really no way around that.
Jack Pitney, professor of government at Claremont McKenna College. He joined us today from the studios of NPR West in Culver City, California. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
And Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor, joined us here in 3A. If you want to, you can read his latest political junkie column at our website, npr.org. And Ken, as always, thanks for coming in.
Thanks a lot, Neil.
When we come back from a short break, we're going to be talking about challenges to the administration on the judicial side. Two legal scholars will join us to talk about new developments in the case of enemy combatant Jose Padilla and the fallout over domestic espionage by the National Security Agency. If you'd like to join that conversation, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.